This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday afternoon, April 29th, 2021. And this is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. On our show, the Fort Smith Boys Home's new community center is finished. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more and finds out why they like the name Fort Smith Boys Home so much. And in our second half hour, Leah Uribe delivers a brand new sound perimeter. After Ozarks, on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR, reaction to President Biden's speech to Congress, along with other news of the day, and a primer on spring bird songs across the country. Plus the afternoon's news on Here and Now, starting at 1. A committee of University of Arkansas students, faculty, staff, and alumni is recommending the removal of J. William Fulbright's name from the College of Arts and Sciences, the removal of a statue of the former U.S. Senator from outside Old Main, and the removal of the name of former Arkansas Governor Charles Bruff from a dining facility. A report from the committee reads in part, J. William Fulbright, while senator, voted against the interests of black students and supported values antithetical to the university. For many, the statue is a memorial to those segregationist values and a daily reminder to our black students of that time. The senator was one of the signers of the Southern Manifesto that opposed many forms of integration in public life in the 1950s. The entire Arkansas congressional delegation signed that manifesto. In a statement, University of Arkansas Chancellor Joe Steinmetz writes, "This matter is complicated by Senator Fulbright's deep connections to the state and university and important international contributions, at the same time acknowledging that the name causes pain for some on our campus. The chancellor is scheduled to hear from others about the matter and seek feedback throughout next month." Arkansas numbers connected to COVID-19 are seeing an increase after the most recent 24-hour testing cycle. The Arkansas Department of Health recorded 291 cases and one additional death from the virus. People hospitalized because of the virus increased by 8 patients. Active cases increased by 64. The number of Arkansans 16 and older fully vaccinated, now just more than 30%, with about 12.5% partially vaccinated. The number of patients in COVID-19 units in Northwest Arkansas hospitals, 20 as of early last night, is well below the highs reached at the hospitals in January, but higher than the average daily number of patients since mid-March. The weekly average had been below 20 patients combined in Washington and Benton County hospitals for the past 6 consecutive weeks. The Northwest Arkansas Council is hosting a vaccination clinic until 4 this afternoon in the former Sears location in the Northwest Arkansas Mall. Another clinic scheduled for tomorrow from 8 until 4 at the J.B. Hunt headquarters in Lowell. Both clinics will be administering the Pfizer vaccine. There needs to be at least 21 days between the first and second doses of Pfizer. Pre-registration for the clinics can be made at nwacouncil.org/NWA vaccines. Northwest Arkansas Community College's new facility in Washington County is benefiting from a $25,000 gift from Cox Communications. The NWAC Springdale location opened in January 2020. The Arkansas Razorback women's golf team next tees off in Louisville as part of the NCAA tournament, the 18th consecutive trip to the NCAAs for Arkansas. The selection was announced yesterday. Razorbacks will play May 10th through the 12th. And the National Weather Service is warning of flooding in western and southeastern Oklahoma, a flood warning in effect until 5 tonight for that region. Other flood warnings for locations specifically along the Arkansas River remain in effect until Saturday afternoon. Clearing tonight with lows from 48 to 55 across the region. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas lawmakers this week approved a third and final proposed constitutional amendment, which will now be referred to voters in 2022. Last month, Kristen Higgins, a program associate at the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture Public Policy Center, spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the process of the legislature selecting its 3 proposed changes to the state's constitution. Now that the selection is final, Antoinette decided to check back in to discuss what Arkansas voters can expect to see on their 2022 ballot.
2 came from the Senate and 1 from the House. One of the proposals would affect future constitutional amendments and state laws proposed by the legislature and the public. HJR 1005, as it's known right now, would require 60% voter approval for amendments and state laws to go into effect. Right now, it's a simple majority. So if something gets 50% voter approval, it becomes law. And, you know, over the past decade, I went back and I looked at the Secretary of State voter records, the historic turnout for voting in Arkansas, and voters have approved 17 constitutional amendments in state laws over the past decade. So if this proposal had been in place, 8 of those wouldn't have gone into effect. So that means the sales tax for highway construction would have failed, along with Arkansas's medical marijuana amendment, term limits, casino gaming, the legislative ethics amendment, and a requirement that lawmakers approve state agency rules. None of those received 60% voter approval. I just thought that was some interesting context to share.
That is interesting. Thank you for sharing. So the idea behind this is that, you know, changing the Constitution is a big deal. So we want to make sure that not just a simple majority, but maybe more of a majority is for this.
Right. So that's what sponsors were saying, that they wanted to make it harder to change the state constitution. You know, right now there's 102 amendments to the state constitution, which dates back to 1874. So over 100 and something years, you know, there's been 100 and something amendments to the proposal. The most recent one being the half-cent sales tax for road construction that voters approved in 2020. So opponents say that this issue, that it would really affect what's coming from the public, that it would make things harder to approve. 60%, they say, is like a higher threshold than, Arkansas has historically had, and that it wouldn't just affect constitutional amendments, but it would also affect state laws brought by the public as well.
Okay, so what is the second amendment that we will see on the ballot?
The legislature is asking voters to allow them to convene themselves in special session. Right now, only the governor can call lawmakers into special session. Otherwise, the legislature meets at the beginning of every odd-numbered year to pass new state laws, like what we saw this year, and the beginning of every even year to handle budget bills. So they're asking voters to allow them to bring themselves into session either by a call of the leaders of the legislature or by a petition of 2/3 of the House and the Senate.
What has the feedback been like about the proposal allowing legislators to call themselves into session?
Well, lawmakers said that they want to come into session, have the ability to call themselves into session in case of emergency. The whole past year, 2020, with the coronavirus was an example that they cited, that they weren't able to come into session because they were having to wait on the governor to call them in. And so they want to have that authority. They see it as being more of an equal co-branch of government. While, you know, opponents were saying that they just didn't want the legislature to be able to have that authority to come into session whenever they wanted.
And the final proposal, which was approved just recently this week, deals with religious freedom.
Right. The Senate has also referred something called the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment, which sponsors say would guarantee freedom of religion is not burdened by state or local law. Sponsors said that they were following an Alabama amendment when drafting this proposal, that they were concerned about future lawmakers, future courts interpreting existing religious freedom laws. They cited recent examples of churches being unable to meet during the pandemic, and they said that this would just enshrine protections in the state constitution, as well as state law. This was just voted on this week, and there were some legislators speaking against it, saying that they thought that the proposal was redundant to what protections already exist, while others were concerned that the wording of this proposal would possibly open it up for more court challenges.
That kind of leads into my next question, is there any chance that voters may not see these on the ballot. Occasionally, when there are voter-led initiatives, they don't they find themselves in court challenges and they don't necessarily end up on the ballot. Is it the same type of thing for these constitutional amendments that are referred by the legislature?
There are different standards for Arkansas ballot issues coming from the legislature than from the public. There are different parts of the state constitution dealing with what the legislature can propose and what the public can propose. And historically, the court system has been reluctant to really push back on legislative ballot issues. There was one in recent years that was removed from the ballot before voting started, and that was a proposal that the Supreme Court of Arkansas thought included too many unrelated issues in the same proposed amendment. There was a challenge more recently over the ballot title of a legislative amendment, and the court said that the title that the voter sees on the ballot doesn't have to be explanatory, essentially, as what comes from the public. So these issues that have been referred by the legislature all deal with single subjects. So I don't foresee any court challenges saying that there's too many things wrapped up into them. This year, the legislature did a pretty good job keeping them simple and to one subject.
In Arkansas, both citizens and the legislature can refer these proposed constitutional amendments. Is that usual or is that unusual among states in the country?
Arkansas is one of 15 states across the country where the public can, along with the legislature, put constitutional amendments on the ballot in addition to state laws and veto referendums. So it is a little bit unique. Arkansas is one of three in the South that have this expanded capacity for the public to get involved in the ballot issue process. The veto referendum, you know, that is something that's not used as much. We did see an attempt in 2020 to use that. And there has been some discussion among groups about whether they want to seek a veto of state laws passed in this session that's just now ending. But nothing has been filed yet. You know, the legislature is just now going home for this session.
Right. They're going home for a little bit and we'll come back later in the year to deal with things like redistricting. Redistricting is something that your center has discussed and is following. What sort of resources do you have available for our listeners that may be interested in learning a little bit more about that process?
Well, the U.S. Census just released redistricting data this week for apportionment for the U.S. House of Representatives. So we have some information on our website about that, about what states gained seats, what states lost seats. You know, Arkansas is one of 37 states that saw no loss or gain. And so we have some analysis of that information on our website, as well as some basic explanations of the process that our legislature and our Board of Apportionment go through after every census to realign or redistrict the political boundaries across the state for the U.S. House of Representatives, as well as, you know, state senators and state representatives. And then at the local level, there's also a similar process with city councils and quorum courts. So our website has some information just refreshing people's memory about, you know, what to expect during the process, because it is something that happens only once every 10 years. And, you know, you might forget after 10 years what the process is and how to be involved in it.
That was Kristen Higgins, a program associate at the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture Public Policy Center. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda yesterday. More resources about topics they discussed, including proposed constitutional amendments and redistricting, are available at uaex.edu/PPC.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from the Malco Theaters, offering reserved seating at the Rogers Cinema Grill, Springdale Cinema Grill, and Razorback Cinema Grill and IMAX Theater in Fayetteville. Showtimes, tickets, and information available at malco.com or the Malco app.
This is Ozarks at Large. The nonprofit Fort Smith Boys Home has completed construction of a new community building on their campus. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the facility provides exercise and recreational space for resident boys. But it will also be available for use by the community.
The Boys Shelter in Fort Smith, founded in 1978, today is rebranded as Boys Home for a really good reason, says Eddie Donovan, longtime executive director.
I mean, it was successful as the Boys Shelter, but I would take kids to school, pick them up for appointments, and they would always say, "Are we going home?" And I would say, "Yes." And so I heard that enough that I know it's just semantics, but to me, the Boys Home was better than the Boys Shelter. I know this is not their home, but we wanted to try to make it as home-like as possible. So we still have both names for some tax-exempt reasons as a DBA where we could go use either one, but the Boys Home is our new logo, and that's what we're kind of hanging our hat on now.
Boys Home is licensed by the Arkansas Department of Human Services to take in children placed into foster care. Expert staff can accommodate youngsters from 1 to 18 years of age, but is mainly focused on teenagers.
Predominantly are 13 to 18. You know, we can pretty much go wherever we need to, and we've had a few younger kids in the recent past, you know, with approval through DHS. But for the most part, we're 7th grade through high school.
Boys Home operates a qualified residential treatment program for troubled teens, which number 10 presently.
These kids, God bless them, they've been troubled, they've been abused, they've been neglected. So some have a little bit of an attitude, which I would too. But once you show them you care, then they start caring back. It's amazing how that works. And that's the same thing with respect with these kids. And I'm old enough to know I can demand respect all day and not get any. But if I give one of these kids respect, I get it back. And that's what we try to do.
But Donovan says they offer boys a real home.
The perfect scenario would someone comes either in a foster home if it's available, or if it's not, they come here. We get them where they need to be until the parent can get their situation fixed, and then they can go back there. But we are a long-term facility in case that doesn't happen.
Boys Home, a spacious ranch house, is located on a forested campus in southeastern Fort Smith.
When I first saw this place, I thought it was just a home, but it was a home, but it was built for boys. It wasn't a home that was, you know, somewhere handed down. It was a home built for that. It's a wonderful lot. I'm not sure the acreage we have, but we have a huge outside activity area where they can play volleyball, basketball, and other things. And now we're building a community building.
That community building is almost finished after years of planning, fundraising, and construction on a strict budget. It features a fully equipped gym and basketball court to allow boys and staff to blow off steam and work out, which benefits both physical and mental health.
But also, through DHS, I was able to get a grant to be able to buy exercise equipment. I bought 7 exercise bicycles. You know, some are just bicycle seats. The others have more chairs for kids that aren't capable of doing that. We've got some rowing machines and stuff, and so everybody's going to be able to participate.
And the community building is so named for a reason, Donovan says.
Yeah, it is a community building, and it's a gym, but it's much more than that, and that's why we named it the community building. Within that, we're going to have tutoring, we're going to have therapy, we're going to have training classes, not only for the boys, but the staff as well. We also have purchased a big projector where we can show movie night and do things in there. So this is going to be a used facility.
Nonprofits in the area, he says, will be welcome to use the center for meetings and certain events.
We would not be here without community support, and that goes from individuals, families, churches, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the United Way. They've been instrumental in us being here. And if they want to come here and get offsite and have a meeting in there, they can do that. I want to let any business that supports us or nonprofit to be able to use that.
Boys Home has raised half the cost of constructing the new community building, scheduled to open late May, so is seeking support from anyone able to give.
Well, there's a lot of ways to donate. You can go to our website, which is fsboyshome.org, and there's a donation button, and it also gives you an update on the staff and the progress and some of the things we've done, which I think tells a big story. Also, you can get our newsletter on there, and that will also do that. There's a couple other ways. You could You could call 479-646-2819. Also could email me at Boys Shelter Director, one word, and there's two S's on boysandshelter@gmail.com. Again, all those contact numbers and emails are on the website. Again, fsboyshome.org will give you all the information you need.
Boys Home collaborates with the Department of Human Services to find loving families for all boys who arrive on their doorstep. For example, a 14-year-old boy showed up depressed and struggling, but with lots of support, enrolled in school, joining the basketball team, later excelling in both sports and academics, and 2 years later, he was adopted. And all boys, Donovan says, who age out of the system receive assistance from DHS to transition to independent working lives. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Next week, May 2nd through the 8th, is National Drinking Water Week. The Beaver Water District is asking anybody who uses water, and that's, what, almost everybody, to take a moment to consider the value of clean water and the science and work required to make the water available. They're asking members of the public to say thank you to water workers in person or on social media with the hashtag Drinking Water Week. More information at bwdh20.org. Those high-tech seesaws are still in Bentonville. The Scott Family Amazium is keeping the installation Impulse on the museum campus through May 10th. The seesaws work in tandem to generate a light show and an ever-evolving composition of sound. Each one is 30 to 40 feet long and operates in the way seesaws with far fewer lights or speakers operate. Gravity, basically. Members of the public can try them out during Amazium operating hours. Admission to the museum not required for you and a partner to make sound and light. Bentonville will host the first ever Arkansas Lacrosse Championship Saturday afternoon. The Bentonville Tigers and Episcopal Collegiate School from Little Rock will meet at noon at Bentonville High School's Tiger Stadium for the championship. Bentonville competes in both the newly formed Natural State Lacrosse League and the Oklahoma Lacrosse Association. Tomorrow afternoon on Science Friday on KUAF, plastic pollution is one of the biggest environmental crises of our time. We'll hear about the latest research on how to break down our surplus of plastic pollution and the earth-friendly alternatives. Plus, what if fake news wins? How would we solve crimes in space? We'll take a ride into some possible and not-so-possible futures tomorrow on Science Friday from 1 to 3 on KUAF 91.3. And if you're ever in the mood for classical music, KUAF has you covered around the clock. KUAF 2 is our 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week classical music radio station. You can find KUAF 2 for free on your HD radio, in your car, or at home. You can also find it by going to KUAF.com, and you can ask your smart speaker to please play KUAF 2. We also have KUAF 3, which is a jazz station, available again for free through all the same ways. And through the weekends on KUAF 2, you can hear encore broadcasts of our locally produced music programs like Shades of Jazz, The Pick and Post, and The Generic Blues Show with Paul Kelso. More information about all of it can be found at KUAF.com.
I'm Paul Gatling, and this is today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. On the program, an interview with Paul Taylor, who is the CEO of OCH Health System. It's known in the healthcare business as a safety net provider. The company maintains a business office in Springfield, Missouri, but the main hospital campus is a 25-bed critical access hospital in Gravette. OCH also has additional clinics throughout Arkansas and Missouri. That interview, plus a rundown of other business headlines this week, are on the way next on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The OCH Health System is a tri-state safety net healthcare provider headquartered in Gravette, serving both urban and rural communities throughout the Ozarks. In an interview this week, I spoke with Chief Executive Paul Taylor to discuss rural healthcare during the past year of the pandemic, vaccine hesitancy, and a legislative solution to delay recoupment of COVID-19 Medicare loans.
We started out in Springfield with a hospital in Springfield. Now we are a health system with a critical access hospital in Gravette, Arkansas. And we have a dozen rural health clinics spread out through the Ozarks in Arkansas and Missouri. And we also have three other non-rural health clinics also in Arkansas and Missouri. We are what the industry would call a rural critical access safety net provider sort of health system. 90% of the people we serve are rural and covered by a governmental insurance program like Medicare or Medicaid.
Sure. Yeah, and that's kind of what I was going to get into with you, is just kind of get a sense from you of what the past year has been like and your experience as a rural healthcare administrator during the pandemic. Just your operations, your procedures, just how have you been impacted these past 12 to 13 months?
Well, like everyone, the impact has been dramatic for us. A little unusual, I guess. You would think that a healthcare system would be very busy during a pandemic, which we have been, but also, you know, I guess, you know, swamped with a lot of paying customers, so to speak. But that's not been the case, and so we've been busy in the hospital itself. Our bed census has been very high, and we took care of, during the height of the pandemic in Arkansas, we took care of a number of COVID-positive patients in the hospital on the inpatient side. However, on the outpatient side, well, frankly, we had to completely shut down the outpatient part of the hospital during the height of the pandemic. No outpatient surgeries and no other outpatient procedures. And our clinics, which is kind of our bread and butter, we do a lot of primary care. We're also, of course, impacted as patients tended to stay home. And so we quickly developed a greater capacity for doing telehealth visits and actually some home visits and that sort of thing to try to make certain that we didn't lose track of people. And things are right now beginning to return to normal. We still, though, see our expenses running about 20 to 30% higher than normal, while our revenues continue to run about 20% lower than normal. So one of those situations you don't like to see where, because of the pandemic, we're having higher costs but also reduced revenues.
Right. And you are starting to see some of those operations and some of those surgical procedures come back too as well?
Yes, sir. Yes. Yep. We are returning to the same service level but not the same patient volume.
Right. Got you. Well, let's talk vaccines and, you know, getting the shots, a big issue and kind of a hot button issue right now. Why is that? And what is OCH doing to maybe educate the communities where you serve on vaccines?
Yeah, that is the point of emphasis in our system right now. Just to give you the real up-to-date numbers, we have more vaccine available than we have arms to put it in. It didn't start that way. Obviously, you know, we were like most, we were scrambling to get vaccine to cover first our own people, the healthcare workers and then the elderly. And now, of course, anyone over 16. In the beginning, we were scrambling to get enough vaccine to vaccinate everyone. And now we're sitting on 600 doses of vaccine and we're really pushing to try to get people to come in. We are doing everything we can, you know, even just calling people. You know, we're using social media. We've done a little bit of regular marketing advertising to let people know that we have vaccine available and to, you know, come in and see us and let them get vaccinated. We've been
is that working? Do you see any results from that? I mean,
well, not
as much as you'd like.
Yeah, right. It really has slowed to a trickle. And that's unfortunate. There's a lot of people in our market areas in Arkansas, Missouri that are still not vaccinated.
Yeah. Well, what do you say to those people if there's anything you could maybe drive home to them? What do you say to those that are hesitant about the vaccine?
Honestly, what I've been saying lately is think of it this way: you're not really doing this for you. You're doing it for your neighbors, for your communities, for your nation. The sooner we can get everybody vaccinated, the sooner we can completely return to normal. Mm-hmm. So don't think about yourself so much. Think about everybody else. And if you think that for some reason it's not necessary for you, or you know, you're a little worried about it for yourself, well, then stop thinking about yourself and think about everybody else. It will be a safer place to live once everybody's vaccinated.
Sure. Kind of last question for you. We have a new presidential administration. We are slogging through a legislative session here in Arkansas that's quickly coming to an end, I think, this week. Just from a legislation standpoint, either of those levels, what are the issues maybe you've been monitoring just in terms of how it impacts your organization?
I hate to give you something that's a very small niche, but for us, the rural hospitals, I've been strongly advocating for some legislative remedy for the recoupment of the Medicare funds, which were advanced to us a year ago during the height of the pandemic. Almost everybody got funds from Medicare advanced to them, and they put it back a year thinking the pandemic would be over and, you know, in the rearview mirror in a year's time. Yep, here we are still dealing with it, and now Medicare is recouping those funds. So it's making it really difficult for rural health systems like ours to deal with, because we're still dealing with the pandemic, and now they're recouping money. And so we're desperate to get a legislative fix for that.
And that's Paul Taylor, the chief executive of OCH Health System in Gravette. Turning to other headlines this past week, Karen Minkle has resigned as the Walton Family Foundation's Home Region Program Director. She spent 9 years with the foundation, but tells the Business Journal that now was the time for reflection and to explore other opportunities. The foundation is conducting a search for Minkle's successor. And Walmart is planning for up to 50% of its corporate employees to return to their offices by July. Chief People Officer Donna Morris outlined the return to work plan in an email to employees last week and obtained by the Business Journal. And Arvest Bank released the latest Skyline report on commercial real estate in Northwest Arkansas for the second half of 2020. Amid a flat vacancy rate last year, the report says the region's commercial real estate market remains strong, balanced, and healthy. You can find more on all of those stories online at our website. Just visit nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. You can always find our show as a podcast for free by going to any of the major podcast distributors. And if you ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large, you'll hear the most recent edition of our show. The Arkansas General Assembly passed quite a bit of legislation during a session that was the longest in more than a century, along with bills concentrating on transgendered residents, gun laws, and what can or cannot be taught in schools. There was legislation requiring water bottle filling stations to be installed in all new school buildings and be part of public school renovations and additions. Supporters of the legislation say the water bottle filling stations replace long lines at water fountains and will mean a better chance at proper hydration throughout the day. Mary Miller, the coordinated school health coordinator at Springdale Public Schools, says the new law can be beneficial to students in many ways.
First of all, it can help with increased consumption of water. Waiting in lines at drinking fountains isn't that conducive to consuming adequate amounts of water. And then with that comes optimal hydration levels. And another thing we like to do is sort of acclimate kids to make water their beverage of choice. Even though we don't serve soft drinks in the schools, we still want them to think of water first when they're not at school.
I know you said that there aren't the sugary drinks available in school, but of course sugary drinks are available 24/7 outside of the building. Could it be if water becomes the primary choice of drink for students, they actually perform better in school? Do we know anything about that?
We do. We do. Proper hydration affects cognitive performance. It also affects fine motor skills. So there's definitely a correlation between hydration and learning.
Do you know anything about the technicalities of putting in a water filling station? Is it kind of like putting in a water fountain, the same sort of infrastructure?
Yeah, I've had to learn about a lot of different things doing this job, putting in tracks and trails, packed asphalt, water bottle filling stations. And normally when a school district removes a drinking fountain, they can fit a water bottle filling station to that space. Sometimes they have to do extra construction work and occasionally even dig up parts of the floor. But Ferndale has been very good about whenever they have an old, outdated water fountain that needs to be replaced, we have been replacing them with hydration stations. I think we're up to somewhere around 60 or 70 hydration stations in the district. Many of them were grant-funded through the American Heart Association or through the Blue and You Foundation or ISEP, which is Innovative Solutions for Educational Partnerships. Mm-hmm. But many of them were also just installed by our maintenance department when old ones were out. And then this year, we had to remove all of our water fountains because of the contagious respiratory disease that is COVID-19. And so we feel like the water bottle filling stations are much more hygienic.
I think I read a quote from you in a prior article that mentioned the percentage of young people who are obese is higher than the percentage of young people that ever smoked. Am I remembering that correctly?
I believe that's correct.
Wow. That kind of gives you an idea of the health challenge.
The severity of the epidemic that we face. I just want to say that the partnerships that have been established with groups like the American Heart Association have been very supportive in leading efforts to revise school board policy and in also finding donors to provide hydration stations. I feel like in partnership, we can do things much better than we can do them by ourselves. American Heart is focused solely on health, and schools are focused mainly on education. So when we put partnerships into play like that, we just achieve better things.
Mary Miller is the Coordinated School Health Coordinator at Springdale Public Schools. She talked with us about the legislation requiring water bottle filling stations in new school buildings, renovations, and additions earlier this week.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We opened our segment today with a well-known piece from the classical music repertoire, Spring, La Primavera, from the Four Seasons, a group of four violin concertos written by Italian composer Antonio Vivaldi in the early 1700s. Vivaldi wrote these pieces for solo violin and orchestra and provided accompanying poems that expressed what the instrumental music was all about. La Primavera's first movement opens with depicting scenes that are literally translated into music. Birds singing happy songs, streams of water, and a gentle breeze. Vivaldi also speaks in this movement of the storm, the thunder and the lightning, and the return of peace afterwards, the birds' happy songs. Let us listen to the end of Vivaldi's Spring Concerto first movement, interpreted by solo violinist Alana Yusefian and the early music ensemble based in San Francisco, Voices of Music. That was the end of the first movement of the concerto La Primavera, Spring, from the Four Seasons by Italian Baroque composer Antonio Vivaldi, interpreted by Voices of Music and Alana Yusefian in the violin. String instruments have a unique way to connect with each other in the orchestra, as well in the very notorious type of chamber ensemble, the string quartet. I'm closing Sound Perimeter today with yet another evocative piece, this time of an emotion, grief. Manhattan-based composer Alexandra Du Bois says of her composition, quote, "Grief is like a kaleidoscope. Behind rainbows are stories of shadows and downpours of sorts, even death. Colors always emerge. Light both follows and precedes one. Perception of sound is not
unlike color. Grief is like a kaleidoscope. It is always changing. Like joy, a rainbow, a memory of what passed before its color. End quote. This piece was commissioned by the Kronos Quartet for their 50 for the Future, the Kronos Learning Repertoire Project in 2019. Enjoy the colors, the patterns, the ebbing and flowing, and that power of music to paint and narrate. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tuesday, the World Trade Center, Arkansas, will host the first of five sessions in May focusing on Arkansas exports as part of World Trade Month. The first session will be a discussion of President Biden's foreign policy and global realities. The forum will be co-hosted by former U.S. Transportation Secretary Rodney Slater and Nelson Peacock, President and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council. Additional sessions will be held throughout May. Registration is required. More information about the series and about registration can be found at the Facebook page for World Trade Center, Arkansas. The latest U.S. News and World Report ranking of the top high schools in Arkansas includes seven Northwest Arkansas schools in the state's top 10. Haas Hall Academies in Fayetteville and Bentonville top the list at number 1 and 2, respectively. Bentonville High School, Rogers New Technology High School, Fayetteville High School East, Arkansas Arts Academy in Rogers, and Bentonville West High School are ranked 4th, 5th, 7th, 9th, and 10th, respectively. Haas Hall in Fayetteville was ranked 50th in the country. More details can be found at usnews.com.
Walton Arts Center presents Art Heist, a walkable outdoor theater experience running May 6th through the 23rd. Participants use their skills to solve this true crime art theft while interacting with a wild group of suspects who share their side of the story. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. The Little Craft Show annual spring event is Saturday, May 8th, 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Shiloh Square Pavilion in downtown Springdale. This event will feature over 75 makers from across the South and Midwest, plus live music, art installations, food, and drink. Admission is free. More information available at thelittlecraftshow.com.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, rethinking traffic stops.
What the empirical research says is that, you know, drivers of color are not only more likely to get stopped, but they're more likely to get searched, cited, arrested during traffic stops. And so, you know, it's not only the stops, but also everything else that could happen.
A proposal to remove police from the business of traffic control. We'll have a conversation with Jordan Blair Woods, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Arkansas, about his research regarding police and traffic stops. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. We're joined once again with Damara Baker of Rockin' Baker, located here in Fayetteville. Damara, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much, Peter. You know how much I love talking to you. Rockin' Baker is a life-changing wholesale bakery that trains and employs individuals on the autism spectrum so that they can pursue their passion and what they want to be in life.
Damara Baker with Rockin' Baker. Okay, y'all have launched a new Chef Challenge series. It began with Chef Simon Brown from Blake Street House. He shared some favorite ingredients with the cadets, and then I guess they were just released to see what they could do with what Chef Simon gave them?
Yes, and that was so interesting because some of them even, how to say, they were so afraid of coming up or thinking that they could never make something. Yes, they have been working on the bakery, but they could never think that they could do something on their own. Mm. And it was a fun challenge because, you know, that's what you see happening, that they're supporting each other. And at the end, all of them got to sell out all of the bread. So they were really, really proud of the work that they did. And of course, the breads were just so delicious.
Chef Chrissy Sanderson will be the next chef featured. And along with us on the line, we have Chef Chrissy Sanderson, owner of Mockingbird Kitchen. Chrissy, nice to talk to you for the first time.
Oh, thanks for having me today.
Can we get a preview on the ingredients, or is that kind of a secret until you let them know?
It's kind of a secret until I let them know. It's my understanding. I'm supposed to spring it on them. She sent me about 15, 20 ingredients in there. I think I've narrowed it down to about 4 or 5. I've got 2 ingredients that I'm trying to does that overkill? But it's going to be good. I can't wait to try it, and I'm hope to utilize it in the restaurant. I've got a couple ideas for it, and we'll see if we can have some fun.
Real quickly, how would you rate yourself in the world of baking, in the world of bread?
Oh gosh, me personally,
yes.
The experts handle that. We do make a couple of breads. We were making our brioche dough and our brioche buns, and our focaccia. We still make that in house, but it's people like Damara have got such an expertise, and she's showing the cadets how to do it. So it's a real pleasure for us. It makes us our job a lot easier to have access to somebody. To a bakery like that. So I let the experts handle that.
Chef Chrissy Sanderson of Mockingbird Kitchen. She is chef number 2 in this chef challenge series from Rockin' Baker. This will be taking place in the month of May. Really appreciate you taking time. And also, thanks for working with such a community oriented entity as Rockin' Baker.
Yeah, it's been great. It really has. Thanks for having us today.
Okay. And we'll go back to Damara Baker of Rockin' Baker. What I like about this, too, though, is these cadets, after this challenge is done, they have the opportunity to go and tour the restaurant.
At the end of every challenge, we just go and tour the restaurant where the chef is coming from. So they get to see where the bread that they are producing is being served. And it gets that camaraderie because we get all together and sit down at the table. And it's a good sense of community for them. They say that Rockin' Baker for them is really like their second family. So it's so fulfilling to me to hear that too.
Wow, these cadets truly getting the full spectrum of, kitchen work, restaurant work, being a chef. Very, very cool. Speaking with Damara Baker with Rockin' Baker. Okay, how long will this series go? I'm guessing will there be some other chefs throughout the spring, summer?
Oh, yes. We're going to continue doing this one every other month. And most likely we're going to move back north for the next episode, as we could say, and then come back south. And we're going to keep doing that one so that we can expose our cadets to more places.
Thanks so much for talking to us once again, and love this new series.
Thank you so much, Peter.
The Community Spotlight and KUAF, Local Matters.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and War Eagle. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Contributors today included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, and Leah Uribe. Today's show and today's installment of Sound Perimeter with Leah, produced by Timothy Dennis. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling is produced by Stephanie Brock, and it is part of our continuing partnership with Talk Business and Politics. And the Community Spotlight is hosted and produced by Pete Hartman. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for being with us.